Hey, good evening, everyone. It's Cole Johnson with Mojo with Kojo. Today is Thursday, February 6, 2025. It's about 6:15 p.m. I have my good friend Chad Wainwright here. He is a fellow veteran. He served in the Army, and he's someone that I've known for a couple years ago. We met whenever we worked together at the VA. So, Chad, thanks for being here. Thanks for participating in this podcast. I really appreciate it. And again, I couldn't do this without y'all, without the, people sitting on the other side of the camera. So, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and you sitting down with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course, brother. All right, so I'll jump into your bio real quick and then we'll head over to the questions, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, so Chad was born and raised in Buffalo by a single mother. He has three siblings. He entered active duty in 2003 and he served in the Army until 2008 as a linguist. And you specialized in Thai language, is that correct?
That's right.
And signal intelligence analyst at the NSA. We might have to talk about that
I
because
don't know
that's
how to say.
Chad is a father of two grown children, Ethan and Alyssa. Currently, he's remarried and expecting a baby in April, a girl. Again, congratulations. His education is, he has a bachelor's in political science from UB and a master's from Madai College for mental health counseling. He graduated in 2013 from Madai, currently working for the federal government as a coach slash supervisor or coach supervisor for Veterans Benefits Administration, a branch of the VA. He's been with the VA for about 12 years now. His passion is for the Vietnam era veterans and ending homelessness. He now lives in Tampa, Florida, and he has lived there for the past 6 years. And he said, "I'm a bad golfer, a slow ass runner, and a lover of classical music." So, again, thank you for being here, Chad. So let's just go ahead. Do you have anything you want to add or anything?
I think that summarizes a big part of me. But no, I'm ready for the questions and the interview, and let's go.
All right, cool beans. All right, so the first question is, how was your childhood, or what was your childhood like?
I grew up, as you mentioned, in the intro there, with three siblings, an older sister, now passed away, and two younger brothers, both still living in like the Elma, New York area in the suburb
Okay.
of Buffalo.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course.
We had, I would call it a happy childhood. We went to a private Christian school in West Seneca, New York, Center
Okay.
Road Christian Academy. And religion and faith was a very big part of our upbringing. I feel like I gained a lot from about of who I am now, even during those years, those formative years. I was always kind of a sports nut, like always wanting to play baseball and street hockey and watch football and just kind of your stereotypical boy growing up, just always into that, into the activity stuff. Yeah, I played my Nintendo and Sega and those kinds of things and Game Boys back in those days. Sorry, I'm aging myself a little bit there,
I grew up on all the same things, man.
but yeah, good. Not everything was great. Of course, there was always challenges along the way, but yeah, that might, I would call it a good childhood.
Yeah. And you were raised by a single mother?
That's right. Yeah.
Do you know who your biological father is, or do you know anything about that, or?
Yeah, he was in my life until I was about 5 years old, I'd say. So I
Okay.
didn't really know him well. I later on in life reconnected with him, I would call him now just an acquaintance. I don't harbor any ill will or ugliness or resentment towards him, and I wish him well. I wouldn't call what we have much of a relationship.
I got you. What's the relationship like between you and your two brothers or your siblings?
You know, we're just like being so far apart physically is not exactly conducive to togetherness, you know, emotionally, but texting each other on birthdays and, you know, sharing pictures here and there, and just, you know, if something pops up, we talk to each other, occasionally sending each other's jokes. Kind of your, I would say typical brother's relationship once they're to this age, but I guess that's just my guess.
I gotcha.
I miss them though. I do. I miss both of them.
Yeah, I have two older brothers, and I have my middle brother Shane. I haven't seen since my oldest brother got married, and I think they've been married, I don't know. Don't quote me on it, but I think they've been married like maybe 5 years, maybe 6 years now. So I don't see them. I mean, we talk on the phone pretty regularly, but as far as like being around each other, and I think that's one of the family aspect. I mean, even though like I have my kids, like I have my family here, that's all I have here in Buffalo is just my two kids. Like I don't have any other family here. You know, my ex-wife has all her family here. You know, if it weren't for the kids.
Right. You said you're from Florida.
Yep. I'm originally from Gainesville, Florida. Yeah, I definitely can see where you're coming from as far as like missing your brothers and stuff. Cause I miss my brothers too. I wish that there was a way for us to like instant transmission to one another's positions and just hang out for a little bit for a couple hours and then, you know, pop back on over home. But, that technology doesn't exist, at least not
Frontier
that we're aware of.
Airlines, it does exist.
Frontier. Yeah. I gotcha. All right, so you joined the Army in 2003, correct?
That's right.
Why, if you don't, you know, do you want to go into a little bit about that? Like, why'd you join?
Sure. I at that point in my life, I actually had two young children at that time. And I was working two jobs and also finishing off my bachelor's degree in early 2003. Those of you who are of a certain age will remember what was going on in 2003, early in the year. There was talks of WMDs in Iraq, and I believed it. I believed it. You know, maybe I got duped there. I believed it. Anyways, I was finishing off my, I think in my last semester of my bachelor's degree, as Cole mentioned, political science. And I had a kind of like options. And one of them was to either go to law school. One of them, I was being offered a job as a paralegal somewhere in downtown Buffalo. I was being given the option in the military to either join as an officer and go to officer candidate school, or an enlisted, and I had strongly considered both the Marine Corps and the Army. What the Army offered me didn't even allow me to go through the door of the Marine recruiter. It was we're going to send you to California. You're going to be able to learn a language. You're going to be able to be in this career field that you want. And ultimately I wasn't ready for more academia at that point, especially with young kids. I thought doing service to the country, you know, not to be cliche, but I was like, there was that, like, I can do my part for the country. You know,
yeah. I think that's true. I mean, that's why I joined. Like I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. So.
But I just don't want to make it sound like I'm better than I am. You know, like I had my own personal goals and aspirations, and it wasn't just, I'm going to go serve my country and that's the only thing I'm doing. I wanted to help with my country, help my fellow Americans, and help myself as well. And I can be honest about that. I think that kind of captures that time in 2003.
Gotcha. So, did you deploy? Were you deployed?
I never deployed. I went to, like, as I said, I went to the language school after basic training, and that was 16 months or so of training. And then I had this language skill. I passed language school, and they basically, the Army said, well, we don't really need Thai linguists right now, so we're going to send you to the worst place in America, known as Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo, Texas. If you've never been there, don't go. I think I was just in kind of a not great place in my mind at that point, you know. So I don't remember it super fondly. But anyways, I went there and learned this signals intelligence analysis, a lot of computer nerd stuff, and those folks that learn that kind of thing are—I don't want to say they're not needed in deployment, because there are spots where they would be used, and certainly linguists are of great value, but Thai linguists not so much, unless you're talking about at that time like Malaysia and some of the terrorist stuff that was going on there. But anyways, no, I spent the great majority of my time in the Washington D.C. area. At the National Security Agency. During the same time, Edward Snowden was there, by the way.
Oh, wow. Did you like, ever have any communication with him?
I like to think, in my imagination, Cole, I like to think that he and I rode the elevator together a few times. I would have punched him.
That's crazy, man. It just it's so like how big the world is, right? And then you like shared a space with this dude, this person, and it's like once in a million years would that have, you know, could that have happened? You know what I mean?
That's the small world.
So what's that? I'm sorry.
I just was saying, I think it's kind of a small world. I think there's those kinds of things. I've got other stories unrelated to this, but we're not going down that road, but it's a small world.
Yeah. Well, you know what, if you want to come back on later on down the road and you want to share some of those stories, if that's something that you feel comfortable with, then I'm all for it.
You know what they call that in the podcast biz? A teaser.
Yeah. All right. So what was it like for you being in the Army?
I kind of briefly breezed by it. I wasn't in the best mental place during my years of service. There, being away from the kids and family, it was tough on me. And I don't want to make it sound like what a martyr I am. I know, Cole, that combat is way harder than what I'm talking about. So anybody that would listen to this and say, this motherfucker, he doesn't know what he's non-combat, he's a pogue, he's a shitbag. Fine, you can say that. But I'm telling you right now, I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to say that my experience was worse than anybody else's. I'm just saying mentally I wasn't in the best place. During those years, thank God, I came to know some of and still know some of the best friends I've ever made in my life during that time.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
That's good.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, just you sitting here and being honest and you know, about not being at the, you know, having the best headspace speaks volumes. I mean, it's been tough, you know, for me the past couple of years. And I don't necessarily know if I've ever been in like a good headspace, if that makes any sense. You know, I think that for me, it's like, it's always kind of like, you know, just kind of, you know, even keeled until you know, it could be anything, you know, and it just kind of sends me down the spiral or the rabbit hole, so to speak, where, you know, I think I said it in my last podcast or I've said it before in some of the episodes, but I could be good for a long time and then not be good. Like, it, you know, something like that, you know, something say something to me or I don't know, I watch a movie. Like, I've been, it's not really, it's not, it's hard for me to say this, but over the past couple weeks, I have found myself watching, you know, like, what movie did I watch last night? Man, I don't remember
Black
the name.
Hawk
I don't.
Down.
No, it wasn't Black Hawk Down. So Lone Survivor, like some of the most recent kind of like, you know, war movies, Lone Survivor, the American Sniper about Chris Kyle. So I've watched those movies over again over the past couple weeks, and I get like really emotional. Like I just start crying, you know? And I think it's because, you know, you get out of the military and you are a part of something, you know, that's bigger than yourself for so many years. And then you're just kind of, you're not a part of it anymore, you know? And I think when I watch those types, I mean, besides like the obvious reasons, like, you know, war and, you know, death and destruction and, you know, people's lives are being ripped apart and all that stuff. Besides that, you know, the obvious parts of those movies. But I think maybe not so obvious is, you know, all those guys were a part of something. We were a part of something, like I said, bigger than ourselves. And then now all of a sudden you're not, you know, I've been out of the Marine Corps since 2011 and I struggle like every day, you know, with, you know, am I good enough? You know, do people like me? You know, the gambit of those types of things run through my mind every day, you know? You know, I don't know. And kind of like not to get off subject, but like, I don't think you give yourself enough credit for being in the military and doing what you did. Just kind of like what, you know, some of your verbiage that you used, you know, like, you know, I'm not trying to sound like a martyr and stuff like that. Brother, you did more than 99.9% of the world's population has done or ever will do.
Maybe I'm being a little humble, but, you know, I want to just say one thing. Like, working at the Veterans Benefits Administration, one of the duties that I had in the past was character of discharge determination coordinator. And yeah. A lot of these folks are folks that left military service with less than honorable discharge. So there's different ways. I think, Cole, you know, these various ways you can leave service, you know, and some of them are very horrible. You do crimes, like felony crimes, that would end you out of service with a dishonorable discharge. But, you know, you might not agree with me, or anybody that would watch this might not agree with my mentality, but every one of those men and women that are in those positions at one point had a pen in their hand and a piece of paper in front of them. And that paper basically said, I will die for this country. And I don't take that lightly at all. Yes, maybe they're disgusting murderers, child abusers, whatever. And they will be dealt with by the law for that. I don't take it lightly, my own service, and I don't take anybody's service lightly. Do I brag about it? No, because I know that some gave way more than me, including their own lives. So I guess that's kind of where the humility comes in.
I got you. Anything else you want to talk about as far as military service or anything like that?
What do I want to talk about in the military? You know, I think you see these guys with the Korea hats on and the World War II hats, and such a part of their identity, even 50 years later. There's pride, and it's great. You know, I remember leaving, and I'm like, I'm never gonna, that phase is over.
Right.
It's interesting to me that how, like, I kind of want a little bit more of me to be the identity of the hat wearing guy. Not entirely. Don't get me wrong. Not entirely. Like I want to talk to those guys. I want to talk to those my you know cohort that I was in service with, and not just the ones that I'm still friends with, but like you know like maybe I'm just pining for my own youth. Maybe I'm romanticizing a period of my own life. I don't know what it is, Cole. I know I'm just, you know, bibble babbling here a little bit.
Oh, no, it's all good, man. It's all good.
I think it's interesting how we can kind of change our minds about things over time. And yeah. This is one of the military services.
Yeah. I think that, like, you know, kind of like what I was saying before, you know, it was so much a part of your, like, who you are for so long. And then, you know, it's not always easy to, well, I shouldn't say it. I mean, it wasn't easy for me to transition. I'll say that, you know, and I still struggle from time to time with, you know, wishing like I miss that brotherhood. I miss that camaraderie. I miss, even though like I necessarily might not have been the best friends with some of the guys in my unit, I knew that there were people that would have my back no matter what. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And that type of bond is very difficult to find, especially, or, you know, once you transition into the civilian world, that bond is, at least for me, I'm speaking from my personal experience, has been one of, if not the most difficult things to like come to terms with. Now I have met some good people. Obviously I know you, the people that I've interviewed so far, my buddy, Paul, Craig, obviously my brother and all that stuff. Like those are people, my buddy that I've interviewed last week, that his episode I'll post tonight so people can watch that. But, like these are people that, and to you included in this, like if you ever needed anything, like if any of these guys or girls ever needed anything, like I want you to know, and I've never said this to you, but I'm saying it now, but if you ever need anything, I'm only ever a phone call away.
Let me one up you. You probably, or you probably heard about Hurricanes Milton and Hurricane Helene. They were very impactful in the area that I live. There's still people, I know friends who lost their homes completely. And it was just a disaster. You know, most of the people saw things on the news and things like that. Anyway, I have a buddy from my time in service who lives, I don't know, about 30 miles away from me, unsolicited. I live near the water, not right on it, but in like a flood zone. A couple of days before the Hurricane Milton, he just reached out and said, come stay with me, man. You know, like, you know, just like that's, you know, I mean, to me, that's kind of special to know that even though we wound up not needing that. I just think I'll be forever grateful. And it makes me want to offer that to my, you know, my fellow veterans, and not just my, you know, fellow veterans, people who in need, but
right,
maybe particularly they get the you know, the preference.
Right, they get the next level. Yeah. But yeah, man, like if you ever need anything, if you ever just want to chat or whatever, like I said, I'm only ever a phone call away.
I feel like I know that, and I hope you know that too.
Good. I'm happy. That does my soul good to hear you say that you feel the same. So
well,
I appreciate
I told you
that.
You can come stay in my guest room, which is
yeah,
right over there.
Like, nice.
Yeah, on the floor. I know.
Yeah, one day I'll take you up on that for good. Sure. For sure. So you served for 5 years. What made you want to get out, or why'd you get out?
Well, I touched on it a little bit. The kids living in Western New York. This is going to blow your mind. When I was in California, I had duty orders to go to Hawaii, which is, they also have a big intelligence base there, mm-hmm. post there. and my then wife was opposed to it. And as a initial entry trainer, Cole, you probably know this. You don't have a lot of pull.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes,
right. Ma'am. You do what you're told when you're told.
You speak when words are asked of you. You
know? Right.
Somehow, I almost think it was a dream. Somehow I told my company commander, I said, my wife doesn't, she doesn't want to go there. Is there any way we can get somewhere different orders? And a miracle happened that I got these orders to NSA. Eventually, after the intelligence school, I still had to go there for 7 or 8 months or whatever it was, and then off to NSA. But just thought that was kind of a funny story.
So now, when you got out of the Army, did you work for the NSA? Because I'm not really sure how that works. So can you shed some more light on that?
NSA has both a civilian and military component to it. Military is there to support in many ways. And I was one of the support folks, doing my computer stuff.
Gotcha.
I was offered actually a civilian job, pretty good civilian jobs. But I did not like Washington, D.C. area. I just wanted to get away from it. It was too transient. And I just was so ready to just go back to the kids. And even though it was in the middle of like a recession, if you remember 2008, it was not a good financial time. We can talk about that a little bit if you want, getting out of service. I just said, I don't care, I'll go be an assistant manager at McDonald's.
Yeah.
10% of what I'm going to make in Washington.
Right. So you worked for the NSA while you were still active duty.
That was my duty assignment.
That was your assignment? Okay. So you didn't work for the NSA after you got out of the Army.
I could have. I didn't want to.
I gotcha. Are there any stories that you'd like to share about like some NSA stories, or is that something that you can talk about or not talk about?
Well, I can tell you the ones that are not confidential. How about that? I can't really tell you about anything. Well, let me tell you this story. I was the overnight shift. And it's a 20.
So you were the night agent
For a good long time. I was the guy working from 10 p.m. until 8 a.m. something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just a weird place, Cole. It's a weird place. And I remember one night, I think it was either a Saturday night or a Sunday night. And, it's pretty, at that time, it was pretty abandoned, It's just a few military people doing their, monitoring things and stuff like that. But I was in the hallway and, just dragging, going to get a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah.
A three-star general walks by me. It just feels surreal, it's those kinds of things that happened. And that's in the Washington, D.C. area. I think that happens more often than not, maybe not at 3 a.m. or whatever time it was, but I thought that was kind of funny. And on a more vulgar story, there were a group of people that thought it was funny to urinate on the outside of that building. And the main glass black building. I'm not saying that I ever did that, Cole. I just
Were they people that worked for the NSA, or were they just like strangers?
They were the same people that signed that piece of paper that said, "I'm going to die for this country." Those people.
That's funny, man.
I think it was more just kind of childish kind of stunt.
Maybe they were drunk, like drunk belligerentness,
Maybe a little bit of that too. But the barracks were, I think they still are, but I've seen pictures recently, maybe like a quarter mile away from the actual building. So you're within the campus. The campus of NSA is within the military installation of Fort Meade, Maryland. So it's like, it's kind of like an installation with inside of an installation.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Or at least
my oldest brother lives in Virginia. I don't know if I've ever seen Fort Meade or been like, I don't.
You have, because you saw a movie with Will Smith and Gene Hackman and that.
Oh, A Few Good Men.
No. What is it called? You have to look it up. I'm sorry. I have seen it. I just don't have a great memory of what it's called. Enemy of the State, maybe? Is it Enemy of the State?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's got Gene Hackman in it.
I think it's that one. I think in the opening scene, they show the building and stuff. You'll have to watch it later tonight if you want to.
What is, in relation to, because I know where, like, the Capitol build, like, I know where all that stuff is, like, in relation to the Capitol building, where is the NSA campus?
So, Baltimore, it's, I would say, directly in between Baltimore and downtown Washington, D.C. So I keep saying D.C., but it's...
Oh, so it's actually in Maryland.
It's in Maryland, and it's, like, okay. Between the two. But I just, to me, it's all one big Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, I gotcha. That's awesome, man. So what was it like? Anything else that you'd like to say about that period of your life as far as being in the military and, you know, like, anything?
Well, just, you know, the friendships like that, like, I know I've already touched on that, but I would host, like, a weekly, I think it was Sunday night poker game. With, you know, it was all just military guys, you know, from
nice.
The various service, from the various branches too. And it was inclusive, and that was maybe some of my fondest memories was that, doing that. And, you know, no big stakes or anything like that. Just you know, win $50, lose $50, whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. When we were deployed, we obviously didn't gamble. But we did play poker from time to time when we had downtime in the hooches and the cans and stuff.
Right.
And I have to say, those were some of the fondest memories of being deployed. And then one of my favorite memories while I was deployed was, I don't know if you have you ever smoked cigars, or do you like cigars or anything like that?
I do, and I see your posts, and I'm like, Cole's living right. Although your doctor might disagree with me.
Well, I don't smoke as much as people probably think I do.
I'm not judging. I'm not judging.
Oh, no. It's good. I probably smoke. I haven't smoked a cigar in a couple weeks now just because it's too freaking cold. But I'll smoke one, you know, during the spring and summer on the weekends, like on a Saturday or Sunday. But no, I don't like... I'm definitely not one of those guys that smokes a cigar every single day, because there are people out there like that. But one of my favorite memories while we were deployed was, I don't know, we were getting ready to pack up and come home. And one of my favorite gunnies that I deployed with, I'm not going to say his name or anything like that, but if he's listening, you know who you are. But we had like a bonfire or something going on, and it was me, the gunny, and a couple of other NCOs and like Lance Corporals and stuff, and we all sat around that bonfire and smoked a cigar. And that was just, nobody talked, not really, but we all just sat around, smoked a cigar, and that was like one of the best memories of being deployed, or one of the better memories of being in the Marine Corps in general for me.
Interesting. That's interesting.
So yeah, that was, I'll never forget that. It was pretty awesome. And then one of my buddies was playing his guitar. You know, there's always that one dude that plays the guitar or, you know, something. And
can I ask a question?
Sure.
You're asking the questions. Can I ask a question?
Sure. Yeah.
And if it's inappropriate, you know, just smack me down. But like, I often wonder for the guys that and gals that were deployed, like, how do you distract yourself from the reality that you're in? And I mean, I know you don't want to be distracted in the way that you have to be vigilant, but like, I don't even know how exactly to ask the question, but I hope it's clear enough that it's that you got some kind of answer.
No, I think I understand what you're asking. So for me, so at the time whenever I was deployed, that was a pretty rough period for me because my daughter was born 6 weeks premature right before I deployed to Afghanistan.
Wow.
So she spent 2 or 3 weeks in the NICU in North Carolina. So at that time I was married. So my wife and I, she gave birth, my ex-wife, my kid's mother, gave birth to our daughter on Camp Lejeune.
Okay.
But then our daughter was transported because the Navy hospital on Camp Lejeune, or at the time, didn't have a NICU for premature babies. So they had to transport her to, I want to say it was Charleston? No.
Carolina?
No. Wilmington. Wilmington.
Okay, gotcha.
It was in Wilmington. So that was the closest NICU to the hospital, to the Naval Hospital. So anyway, long story short, so she came home, and then I deployed like 2 or 3 weeks later. So for me, like, it was very difficult to, and it was, I mean, I'm sure it's like this for most people. Like you said, like, you missed your kids. I was worried about my kids, especially my daughter, and to include their mom too, because it was rough on her too, giving birth, so early. I think the distraction was just working. So I was an ammo tech in the Marine Corps. So, you know, we were always pulling, like, we were always issuing ammo and stuff like that to units that needed ammo that were on the, you know, front lines and doing stuff like that. So that kept us extremely busy. And then when we had downtime, we were always with each other. Like, that was like that group of guys that I deployed with. Like, that was my family for 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of the distraction, was being with them. You know, like, if we, you know, we were always doing something. If we weren't working, we were working out. If we weren't working out, we were at the chow hall eating. If we weren't, you know, at the chow hall eating, we were sleeping. So that part of, you know, just kind of trying to occupy your mind with you know, work or whatever, like, that's kind of what,
just staying busy.
Yeah, staying busy is what okay. Got me through that.
Great answer, actually.
But that's what got me through. And I was able to call, you know, home every now and again, not as often as I think people think that you're able to call home when you're deployed, because you're really not able to call home as much as you'd like. But when you get the chance, I mean, that's the first thing you do, is you call home and, you know, whatever. But I think just staying busy and, you know, trying to focus on, you know, like, just one day at a time, you know, one wake up at a time, you know. So that's kind of like what got me through.
Thanks for taking my question.
of course. So what was it like when you got out during that time? Because that was a pretty rough time, like, in the country as far as economy is concerned.
Getting out, I had this enormous celebration in my heart, like, okay, I'm going to let my hair grow. I'm going to enjoy my freedoms. I'm going to, like, get away from, you know, waking up at whatever god awful time, doing these things that I don't like to do, and just get to be myself. Like I mentioned, that I went to private school. I was also married very young, and then went basically went into more academia and then military. So by the time I'm getting out of military, I think I was about 27 years old. I had not really experienced freedom, Cole, at 27 mm-hmm. years old. I'm not saying I didn't. I'm not saying I lived in Saudi Arabia. I'm not being a martyr. I'm just saying the typical American man experienced by the age of 27, most of them would have been allowed to have the haircut that they wanted at some point, right? And it's a small potatoes. But anyways, that feeling of joy that I'm going to get to do this and overwhelmed the probably more pertinent thing of the economic reality of the country at that moment. I did actually have a couple of jobs lined up. Well, one, I even interviewed at the Buffalo Police Department for some intelligence job that they had. And they said, well, we'll give you the job, but you got to go work in Syracuse. I'm like, that might as well be on the moon. I'm not.
Right.
In retrospect, I probably should have, because it's a pretty good job, but uh-huh. I went through five years of pretty rough economic times for my own personal world.
Right.
I've hurt my 401k. But anyways, I'm getting off track. Getting out, it was mixed emotions. I was going to miss my buddies. I was going to miss some of that. As much as I might not have wanted to admit it at that moment, I was going to, and I did. it was a variety of feelings. I remember, do you know muster duty? Do you know what this is called, muster duty?
Mustard duty?
Without the D, muster.
Like, oh, muster?
Muster the force.
I mean, I think I have a pretty good idea what it is, but fill me in case
I was 2 years out of service. I was 2 years out of service, which when you sign a contract, at least back in those days, it's for years, right?
I know what you're talking about. So I signed an 8-year contract, 4 years active and 4 years inactive reserve.
Sure.
And I had to go to like 2 musters over those 4 years of being inactive reserve. So yeah, I know what you're talking about.
To me, it was terrifying. I thought I was getting stop lost or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Like 2 years, I'm like, my hair is down to here. You know, beard like you've got going on. Like, all right, maybe not like you. I don't think I've got that bad or that much, but it was. I remember that feeling of terror. Plus, I was moving on with my life. Things were happening, and I'll tell you, I had a buddy. This is kind of off the track, but it's still in the same vein as getting out of service. So I hope you'll indulge me.
Of course.
I had a buddy that I was in service with. We were roommates in San Angelo, Texas, in this Intel school. And as it so happened, we both wound up going to the NSA, and we kind of stayed in touch. One day on Facebook, a year and a half or 2 years out of service, he sent me a message and he said, "Hey man, are you going to do this post 9/11 GI Bill?" And I'm like, you know that I can't, you know, we have talked about this, you know that I can't, because I signed up for the loan repayment program when I joined, Cole. Mm-hmm. And that was like, basically you sign a document that says, I give up my rights to the I give up my rights to GI Bill, post 9/11 GI Bill, because you're going to pay my student loan debt, which they did, which I have a horror story for that. Maybe another teaser for another time. Anyways, like they paid it. And so I was like, okay, I'm grateful for that. They did the military, the government did what they said they were going to do. I had my education. I had my honorable discharge. Life goes on. But anyways, he sent me this thing and he's like, no, Chad, like they changed it. They changed it. They now people that got out, it's, prorated for the number of years that you served. Not be saying this exactly right, but because I had served 5 years, I was then eligible for 80% GI Bill. And that changed my life. I would not be sitting here in front of you today, Cole, without that notification, because I remember getting the card in the mail from the military saying something like, or from the government or VA maybe, said, you're eligible for this. And I'm like, these people are stupid. And I threw it in the garbage. Like, I'm like, they don't know what they're sending. So don't be like Chad.
Open your damn mail, folks.
Yeah, you read your VA letters. Don't just look at numbers. Read that, your letters. And if you have
that's a whole
look at it.
That's a whole another story, brother. People that like. You know, I'm sure you've experienced this, you know, in your travels and in what you currently do for the VA. People not opening their mail.
Of course not, no.
Like, open your damn mail.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, come on.
Anyway. Why is the VA so tore up? Well, did you tell them where you're living?
Yeah.
Well,
did you change your address?
5 addresses ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just tell them, just call them, just call the line and say, hey, by the way, I live in Tonawanda now, or I live
right.
in Florida, or I live in Mexico, wherever you live, we'll help you out. Yeah, we will.
Right.
I hope. Anyway, well, I don't know. I lost my thought.
So, you know, you were able to go to school using the GI Bill, and that changed your life.
And that's, you know, I was into the, I'm sorry, thank you for get me back on track. I went to Madai College, which I really liked. I got some great friends there. None of them were veterans. In fact, there were more pregnant women in my class than there were men.
Okay,
this is two of us, two guys in the in the mental health counseling world, which is what I did. I think that's pretty typical. I don't know, maybe I'm stereotyping there or whatever, but or generalizing anyways. But anyways, did that. And while I was there, they had a work study program specifically for VA. Some of you may not know that. Like VA has a work study program where they basically will pay you minimal, you know, as long as you're helping with VA related stuff. I forget what the forms are called, but processing student veterans through the process. I then joined an organization, even became like a vice president of it, the Student Veterans of America chapter at Madai. During that time, there were a lot of new veterans. Maybe that's still true, but I think it was particularly true then. And so there was a lot of universities, colleges seeking student veterans. Because they had all this basically money to bring to the university, and they were looking for it. So I did that, and then ultimately got a job at Erie County as a veteran service officer, and basically eventually parlayed that into a position with VBA, VA, the Veterans Benefits of America. Or, I'm sorry, Veterans Benefit Administration, and I've been doing that ever since. I eventually, at some point in 2018, transferred from Buffalo office to St. Petersburg, Florida, and that's where I am today, Tampa.
Right. So what was – can we talk a little bit about – like – it seems like your one of your major drives is to help, you know, like you said in your bio, you know, Vietnam era veterans and or homeless veterans. So what was your drive to like want to do like what you do?
You know, I'll tell you, like when I went and started working at the downtown VA office, the Veterans Benefits Administration office, what was that, 2013? I liked interacting with people, and a lot of that particular job starting off was just administrative paperwork, you know, process this, process that. And that really wasn't who I was, or at least not fully. So I just started volunteering for things, being an instructor. Eventually, I became the homeless coordinator. That's where I met you, Cole. I was the homeless coordinator for Buffalo VA Regional Office, and I had to go to HVCC, and I met a lot of great people in that office. At the one stop, and what was the address on Elmwood, or I forget the address, but you know where I'm talking about.
Yeah,
it was just devastating to see some of the. Stories, and I just noticed, at least to my eyes, it was a lot of, like, it seemed like the Vietnam guys were the ones that got screwed the worst. And I have compassion and a passion for all veterans and of all eras. I don't care, Cold War, Vietnam, Korea, OEF, OIF, all of it, but particularly the Vietnam era veterans. Like, what I want to say, what we as a nation did to those people, to those men and women that served. Yeah, was there misbehavior? Was there drug use? Was there all kinds of things going on during that time? Yeah, they remember there was. They were conscripts, almost all of them.
Right.
They were
right. They were forced to join. They were forced to go. And right. We like took we chose to join on our own accord. Right.
And you know, and then the people that dodged the draft, you know, are now our current and former presidents. And the, you know, these are the people that were spitting on, you know, these veterans when they're coming back. I'm not saying our president's dead, but I'm saying that era, the people of those era, like they didn't spit on. And they didn't have the benefits, Cole, that you and I have. I guarantee you that. Like, and now, you know, I remember there was a guy who living in the Niagara Falls Zoo. Remember that? You remember that guy?
Oh, yes. I remember him very well. I don't want to say his name because I don't remember his name. Well, I do remember his name, but I don't want to say his name on.
Right. That, like, he was Vietnam era, right?
Yep.
Like, and that
I think so, yeah.
And that just, can you imagine that happening to an OEF veteran today? Like, even for 1 year, let alone what, 30 years that guy lived there? Like,
yeah.
Some insane number. And I don't know. That I think that's where it grew in me. Like, wait, it's 2015, 2017, and these guys from 1968 are still living on the street. Like, what is going on here? And we can talk about functional zero for homelessness. That's beautiful. That's great. We're making progress. But, you know, there's work to do. There's work to do. And I'm alarmed at, you know, kind of the way we're heading with, like, cutting numbers, because I don't want to go back to 2013 and 2014 at VBA. And veterans waiting, you know, 800 days before anyone will even look at their claim.
That whole process, like the whole claim process, and I think it's gotten better.
Yes.
You know, just since when I went through the whole process, it's gotten better. But there's got to be, I don't know, there's got to be a better way or something. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I can touch on the, they call it the optimization champion for my office, one of two. My office is about 800 people. And it has to do with automation of how we're, and I'm not the tech guy, even though I did this Intel stuff, I'm really not. You know, my son will laugh at me if he knew that this is like what I, like, I, wait, this guy, he can't even figure out how to get the audio on. But no, I understand big picture stuff as far as automation goes, and I think, you know, people can be afraid of AI a little bit and automation, but I think that's where we're heading. It might mean less jobs for veterans, for people, but you know, some, maybe you're happy about that, maybe you're not, but I think that's why claims are going to get better. And it's not going to happen overnight, you know, especially with the government. It takes years and years and years to go through, figure out a way to do things, and incorporate it into old systems and that kind of thing. But I maybe I'm naive to be optimistic, but I would say that I am optimistic about that, about veterans claims processes and going through that. And wouldn't it be nice to have uniformity, Cole, like where veteran A submits a claim and details are identical to veteran B, but they right now they might have divergent outcomes. Mm-hmm. Whereas an AI or an automation system would process those claims identically and be able to read them identically. I know I'm getting into technical stuff here, but I just would say I like just know that there's somebody in VBA that's somewhat optimistic, and I'm passionate about getting that right and helping in any way that I can be helpful.
Yeah, and one of the major reasons why I started this podcast was so that people could see, veterans can see that there are people out there that genuinely want to help veterans. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, like all you got to do is reach out. And this is my own personal experience with working for the VA and doing what I did at the homeless program and all that stuff. But a lot of the times, and I don't know if there's, and I don't want to say that there's people that we should blame, or like I don't want to put the blame on people, but a lot of the problem is people, veterans, don't know what they qualify for
Oh, yeah.
or what programs are out there. And I think a lot of where that comes into play is when you transition out of the military. Like when I got out of the Marine Corps, I had to go through set what's called, or what was called when I got out, it was called SEPs and TAPs. It's separation and whatever the TAP stands for. I don't know. I don't remember. And I don't even know if I was told.
Assistance program, maybe.
Some I don't know. But like when I got out of the Marine Corps, I already had a functional resume. I already was service connected to a certain percentage. I think whenever I got out of the Marine Corps, I was 30% service connected for my back, because I have two bulging discs in my lower back. But a lot of, especially the Vietnam era guys, those guys and girls, they didn't know anything, or they weren't told anything. And some of it is they didn't want anything to do with the military or the government after they got after they got out. And that's how I was when I got out of the Marine Corps. But like luckily I was made to go to SEPs and TAPs, and I went through like 2 or 3 weeks of doing that before I got out of the Marine Corps. So I had some of that stuff already lined up and ready to go. But I think that the unfortunate side is people, veterans that we work with, or that you work with, or that I've worked with in the past, they don't know. You know what I mean?
Tell you sound like you paid attention in SEPs and TAPs,
I
and
tried.
but I think it's not uncommon for to hear stories where people were checked out, like emotionally,
Oh.
mentally, physically, metaphysically, just completely, like, just fuck off, let me
Oh.
get out of here. Will you just
One, yeah.
sign my paper so I can leave? I want to go get coffee or sleep, go back to sleep.
Right.
And there was a bad attitude by anybody, including yours truly, that might have had that. I wasn't that extreme. I really wasn't,
Yeah.
there were people there to help file claims. And, it's sad that they didn't. I just wanted to go back to one more thing on these Vietnam vets. Like, I've had in the years that I've worked at VBA, I've got to see rating decisions from 1971 and 1969. And it's just horrifying,
Yeah.
just horrifying. Like,
Yeah.
what we would deny as a nation, as like, well, yeah, he was, yeah, he was in combat in Da Nang for, 3 years, but he doesn't have PTSD. He couldn't have it. He's fully functional, fully like. And can you imagine that now? He was in Fallujah for 8 months, like. It's like, give him 100% right now. Give him 100%.
Yeah,
That.
I have had people tell me that I need to act more crazy, that I'm too quote unquote high functioning. And I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean?
I think I know. I think I get the idea of why.
I mean, I get it. I understand, but like I'm not gonna walk around, half naked,
That's right.
speaking gibberish. And like, just because or anyone that's has been diagnosed with PTSD or anxiety or depression, or any type of mental health diagnosis, or substance abuse, like, just because I have PTSD or whatever, that doesn't define me as a person.
That's right.
You know what I mean? That doesn't That I can work, I can take care of a house, I can take care of kids, I can take care of a dog, I can do all these things that every, normal people can do, So
When we were going through mental health training in Madai, this was really kind of unrelated to specifically to veterans, of course. It's just to all human beings who are suffering from conditions. We were told, don't ever say he, she, they are schizophrenic. He, she, yeah. they are PTSD. Because now you're defining who they are as the condition. They may suffer from those conditions. They may not suffer from those conditions. They may have them totally under control to the point where the suffering has subsided. So you got to be really careful with which verb you're choosing. This person is afflicted with. This person has been afflicted with. So I think it's good to, you know, and I know some combat vets and PTSD, those who have suffered from PTSD, diagnosed with PTSD, they are really, you know, strong about the language portion. Don't say I'm PTSD. Don't say I'm this. Don't say I'm anxiety, whatever. Like, and I don't want to say I fully understand, but I want to say I'm sympathetic to it for sure, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, and I appreciate that. And it's just, you know, but that's to kind of get back to what we were talking about. That's why I started this whole thing was, to show people that there are people that care. There are people that will listen. There are people that will help you, but you just, you know, like you gotta say something, you know, you gotta speak up. You gotta make that phone call or, you know, whatever. So, but
you before we went on camera, started recording, you kind of were giving me a breakdown a little bit of like what the main idea was here. And it got me thinking, you know, like Chad, when you think of veteran, what pops into your head, you know, is it this homeless person who's just been in a rough situation? Is it Cole Johnson? Is it Chad Wainwright? Is it this other guy that you know over here? Is it this girl over here? Who, like, I think I'd like for myself to come out of this like having a healthier view of what veteran is. And I think stuff like this can kind of expand your mind a little bit as to who we are, right? It's we. Mm-hmm. It's not me or just you or veterans. It's like it's all of us, you know. So I appreciate what you're doing here, and I think it's a good idea.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I hope so. I really do. I really hope people are able to listen to this and get something out of each story. Mm-hmm. Even if you only get like one or two things out of each, you know, story, that's really all that matters, you know what I mean? And just to hear you know, somebody that, you know, may come from a different walk of life, but you may have went down some of the same paths, and then they diverged, you know, at the end or whatever. But I think a lot of what veterans, or I shouldn't say veterans, a lot of what I have struggled with is feeling, you know, like I'm alone, or, you know, that no one cares, or, you know, nobody wants to be around me, and like stuff like that, you know, stuff that, like, if it goes unchecked, you know, can really, you know, mess you up, you know, mentally. So yeah, I mean, anybody that's listening, anybody that's watching, you know, this is to show you that, again, there are people that care and that want to help. And
there's so many resources out there, you know, the American Legion, Vietnam Veterans of America. Well, I think they've changed now, but, you know, the Veterans Foreign Wars, like the FWs, like there's so many things out there, and they're not for everybody. I remember out of service, like, oh, that's just where the little dudes go and drink all day. And maybe that's still true. Maybe that's true of some of the what are they called? The locations. I forget what they're called. The posts.
The VFW posts.
Yeah. And maybe you got to look around, but I think it does take a little work, I guess, is my point. Find where you feel like you might fit in. And I'm not talking about you, Cole. I'm just talking about veterans in general. Like, I know that there's a little bit of, like, I know that these resources are out there. I know that there's these online resources. I know that there's places to go. I know you can go to the VA and get into groups. I know that there's all kinds of things out there to find that connectivity. And if you're not somebody who's like really alert to that, I think it'd be helpful to reach out to somebody, reach out to me, reach out to Cole, and maybe we can kind of, you know, point you at least in some direction. And it might be nine dead ends before you find one that is even slightly up your alley, so to speak. But I do think it takes work. I do think it takes a little courage. I do think it takes getting out of your comfort zone. By the way, I'm speaking to myself. Hopefully this is not coming off as preaching.
It definitely is not coming off as preaching. That is, like I have said before, but this is therapy for me too. You know, like, this is definitely not something that I personally would ever think that I would be good at. And I'm not saying I'm good at it now, but doing this is so far out of my comfort zone. I you have no idea, you know?
You have the charisma and the likability to get my vote of confidence, Cole, and I hope you continue it.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say that. I told myself that I'd dedicate 3 years of my life to doing this, to, you know, hopefully get it going. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It is what it is. I'm not expecting anything out of this other than just, you know, people sharing their stories and you know, folks having a voice and, you know, being able to bring this to the masses or whatever, you know, whoever's listening,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
But just, you know, it's just as much therapy for me as it is for the folks listening or for you or, you know, any of the other people that I've had on. So, I definitely appreciate, you know, everything that you said and your kind words and all that. If that definitely does not fall on deaf ears. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Appreciate that. And I appreciate the opportunity again. This was actually, you know, let me share this was more fun than I thought I was going to have.
Good. I've reached out. Obviously, I've reached out to people, and people are kind of like, what, you know? And I'm like, it's not Siri. Like, it's not like what you think. I don't know what people are thinking per se, but it's not. It's just a conversation, man. It's two veterans, two brothers, or you know, whatever, having a conversation. That's really all it is. Just,
and it's not. You don't feel in my own home. I don't feel like an audience of, you know, hundreds or thousands or tens or millions of people in front of you. I just feel you and me right now. That's all.
Right. And that's what I want. That's what I want. 100%. Like, there's no, I have no expectation of, for any of this. You know, I want it to be as real and as raw as humanly possible so that people can see that, like, we're just two dudes having a conversation.
Oh yeah.
Trying to help people, or, you know, two veterans having a conversation that want to help other veterans. That's it. That's all it is, you know? So, but anyway, brother, again, is there anything else that you want to share or talk about or anything else that you want to go into more detail about, or?
Not really. Just once again, thank you. Any and all listeners who gave time. Thanks for to our veteran listeners, and maybe there's some active duty folks out there listening. Thank you for your service, all of you. Thank you, and you too, Cole. That's all I just would like to say.
Awesome. So again, thank you for taking the time out of your hectic day to sit down with me and have this conversation with me. And to all the listeners out there, or all the people following or listening or whatever, thank you for participating, and thank you for taking the time out of your hectic day to sit down with us or listen to us and all that jazz. So Chad, again, thank you from the bottom of my heart for participating and being such a willing individual, and thank you for sharing your story, and we will catch you guys on the flip side.
Awesome.